Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin on another show from the UFO Congress. And we're at the Aquarius Casino Resort on the beautiful Colorado River in Laughlin, Nevada. It's a nice day here, a little windy, but not cold like most of the country. That's one of the reasons all the snowbirds come to Laughlin. Well, we came here to meet a lot of interesting people, and we have Patrick Heron. We've talked to him on the phone. Now we're going to be talking to him in person later in the show. But first of all, we're going to meet a woman who travels the world looking for UFO stories, Kathy Dickman. I think you'll find her very interesting. So stand by. We have a great show. Kathy Dickman, world-famous UFO researcher and writer. What's the name of that magazine you write for,
Flying Kathy? Saucer Review in the UK.
And you actually live in Australia, right?
Yes.
Where?
In Adelaide, South Australia.
And now tell us a little bit about Adelaide. That's, what, third or fourth size town? Or?
Yes, we've got the Woomera Rocket Range there, and we've got Kistler Air and Narunga, and they're all bases.
Now, you travel the world looking for UFO stories, I guess.
Yes.
You keep running across them all the time.
Yes, I guess
you're looking for them.
That's right.
You just got back from Cuba, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But you're telling me you actually went up to the military gate with some pictures or slides, or what was that story about in Australia?
Well,
is the military pretty tough in Australia?
This is a U.S.
Okay,
joint U.S. Pine Gap.
Okay,
it's a joint.
Now where
US
is that? Right outside Adelaide?
That's in Northern Territory. That's in Alice Springs,
Okay.
Just outside of Alice Springs, about a 2.5 hour.
They have a range or something up here, don't they?
Well, there's many. Yes, there's many levels to Pine Gap.
You think they got an ET there?
I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know any answers.
I thought I'd get a story. That from you, because you tell me what you did there. That was
well. I thought the work of Dr. Greer was brilliant, and the press conference and the disclosure tape was, I think, one of the best things that could have happened. And I was determined to. I was going up to Alice Springs, and I was determined to get the tape into Pine Gap. So I emailed Dr. Greer to, I told him what I was going to do and would I have his permission to duplicate his tape, make a copy of the tape and give it to the people in Pine Gap, and he said, yes, be careful, but you go ahead, because they could have got me on a technicality of copyright or whatever, anything, you know, they could have pinned on me, so I wanted to make sure everything was all in order. And a friend of mine took me up there, and all the gates of Pine Gap, and then there's about a 5 kilometre one-way road called Hat Road, and all along the...
So this is way out there.
Oh, it's way out in the desert.
Okay.
And the signs all the way along saying, turn back now, no cameras, no
video. Kind of like our Area 51.
Yes, and there's laser security, and we tripped all of those. And another sign, turn back now or 15 years imprisonment. So we just kept on driving and turn back now. And then my friend...
You go any lengths to get this
out. Well, I was switched onto automatic and nothing was going to stop me, you see.
Okay.
And then my friend parked his car underneath a tree, which is about 100 metres away from the gates, and all the trees were wired.
Oh, really?
Yes. But and then I walked the
wired,
last...
Wired, you mean like cameras or something?
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And I walked the last 50 metres on my own up to the gates, and there's two guards waiting for me. And I had Dr. Greer's disclosure tape in one of those little post packs, and I was very polite to them because they looked most unimpressed. And I said, good morning, how are you? And and he said, yes, what can we do for you? And I said, I'd like you to give this package to your radar department, because I didn't know what to say, you know. And they said, why, what's in it? And I said, I didn't want to mention UFOs because that's got a fringe madness tag to
it. Sure.
So
you wanted somebody to look at it.
Yes, and I said, he says, what's it about? And I said, have you heard of Dr. Greer? And they said, no. Of course they wouldn't have it. And on the edge, the outside of the tape, I put, and I told them, I said, they're UERs and UCTs. This is what's in here. And he says, what's that? And that's satellite jargon for uncorrelated targets and unknown event reports. Because if you look up in your files, you won't find any UFOs. They don't call them that. So, and I said, if you give this to your radar department, they'll know all about it. So he took it. But they had the all their cameras and video on me until I got back into the car. And then I emailed Dr. Greer to say I'd just done it, and he said, well done. So, yeah. Because I thought that was important.
So you go to any lengths to get these stories out. Now, before I get to Cuba, you were in Mongolia.
Yes.
When was that?
About 18 months ago.
Okay, and before we even get to Mongolia, I want to mention on our website we have several pictures you've taken with cameras. Now, most of these were with 35 millimeter, weren't they?
Some of them were 35
millimeter. So it just couldn't be something wrong with the digital camera.
No.
You took these pictures that they can see on the website, and you didn't know there was anything there.
Some I did see, others I didn't see.
Okay. And there are strange shapes here.
Mm.
I like that daylight sighting. At first, I thought that might be a rectangle, but it's more like a flying roof or something. What'd you say it was?
The
daylight shot.
The daylight shot.
The little shot you took with the UFO over the
corner. Oh, the top hat.
Yeah, right. Hat.
Yes, a very technical name for it.
Yeah, you're right. So what did you see in Mongolia?
Well, I didn't see anything, but I went there and just asking people if they had seen anything, because when I go to different countries, I don't want to upset their belief system. That is first on my, you know, on my mind. And we had a guide for a week, and I was taken to the Gobi Desert. And second day I was with her, I then asked, when we got comfortable with each other, I then asked her if she'd ever seen or knew anybody that saw lights in the sky. And she didn't know what I was talking about. So I left it for a day or so, and then I said, do you know the word OVNI or UFO? Well, they haven't got any faxes or glossy magazines or anything like that in the Gobi Desert. And she didn't know, she really didn't know what I was talking about. Then I pulled out a picture of that orange plasma craft, which you've just seen.
You're right,
in
right.
The dark.
And we have that picture.
Very similar to Carlos Diaz's picture. I pulled out that and said, have you ever seen anything like this? And she said, do you mean people who visit here from other worlds? I nearly fell off my sandhill.
Came
I really
open,
did.
Right.
Yes. So as she proceeded to tell me of an event which happened about 4 or 5 years ago in the desert, and there were some herdsmen minding that they've got camels and goats. Yeah, that's their main animal, you know, like what they eat over there. And they don't know what time it was. It was well into the night when, this is her description, when they saw a plate-shaped object come down into the in the Gobi Desert. And I asked her, did it land? And she says, no, it just hovered off the ground. And then I asked her, was there anything different about it? Could she describe if there's anything different? And she said, the herdsman said there were people on board. And I asked how big. I didn't say were they grey aliens, short ones, because I didn't want to put any thoughts into her head. And she said no, they were tall, very tall, maybe 10 foot high. And she said they had a bronze, they were bronze coloured, very long legs and long arms, no mouth, no nose and no ears, but one eye. And I didn't... the immediate sensation that happened when she said that, I imagined that to be a lens, but I didn't see it, so I don't know. I
really haven't heard that description before, have you?
Neither have I.
Yeah.
I mean, but this is coming from herdsmen in the desert, you know, so...
Right.
And anyway, she said they had one eye, and then I asked her, was there any information transferred between the herdsman and the sighting? And she said, yes, through their mind. She didn't use telepathy, but she said through their mind, they were told that these craft make themselves visible all over the world to people who are aware and are higher thinkers. So you don't have to be a member of academia or a mathematician.
I started to say, it's as good an explanation as I've heard
exactly.
from anybody. Beats most PhDs' explanations.
Exactly. So when I went back to the capital, which is Ulaanbaatar, I started to inquire if there was any more information, and I got exactly the same sighting. Some people, around about the same time, there was a report exactly the same in the northwest quadrant of the city of Ulaanbaatar. Some other people had seen the exact same craft with the people on board. So those two matched up, they correlated. So that was really good.
How many countries have you been to?
I've lost count. I don't count.
I started to say, I can tell you've been to quite. Yeah, you've been around, Kathy.
And Guatemala, there was a lady living in the jungles in Guatemala, so that's another story. So
did you ever strike out? Find a country nobody had ever seen a UFO?
I was in Nevis, St. Kitts, just off Cuba. When we left Cuba, we went to Nevis, St. Kitts.
What, an island, a little
yeah,
island?
Yeah, it's a little island, yeah, Nevis, St. Kitts. And they had heard them, but they didn't want to talk about it. And they said, several people I asked, and I said, have you heard of OVNIs or UFOs? Oh, we don't get those here. And there were several people just didn't want to talk about it, so...
Well, we want to talk about Cuba when we come back. We're talking to Kathy Dickman, and the name of that magazine again is?
Flying Saucer Review.
Is it on the web, too?
Yes, they have a site.
Yeah, they do
yes,
have a website.
Yes, yes.
Great. Well,
and it's been going for 50
and
years.
Well, it's not a newcomer, then, is
no,
it?
No. And as I mentioned, members of royalty, I believe.
We'll be right back. Don't go away. This is Jerry Pippin. This is a UFO Fire.
In March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
This didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippin Show.
Jerry Pippin. We're broadcasting from Aquarius Resort, and that is in Laughlin, Nevada. And we're right on the Colorado River. We're here during the heart of the UFO Congress. And Kathy came a long way. How long did it take you to get from Australia, Kathy Dickman?
From my home to this hotel, it took about 34 hours. But the direct flight from Sydney to Los Angeles is probably
you
about
can get 14. Around, so you probably get frequent flyer miles.
Oh, yes. This one was free.
Oh, well, great. Yeah. That's the best kind.
Yes.
How do you get to Cuba? You got to Cuba, but it's pretty difficult. Maybe not from Australia.
No, it isn't. No problems in Australia.
Just when you try to leave the States.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. What about your story? And why did you choose to go to Cuba to begin with? Nice weather.
If you like 100% humidity, and
okay,
I don't.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. You're from Australia.
Yes.
Are there humid places in Australia?
Yes, in the East Coast, in Brisbane and Sydney, they're humid as well.
Okay, well, tell me a little bit about you. I take it you went to Havana.
Oh, yes. We went to Havana and also went to Trinidad. That is a city on the south coast.
Tell me what you discovered.
Right. When I knew I was going to Cuba, I managed to get in touch with a Cuban UFO group over there. And I got to know very well over the internet a gentleman called Orestes Guiabao. And when I was in Havana, he met me with 10 of his UFO group, and I was extremely impressed with the credentials of these people. There's no alien T-shirts or anything like that. If they have a sighting, they report it in the paper as it is. You know, they take it seriously. And in amongst this group who came to me...
So it wouldn't be uncommon to pick up the... I don't know what the name of the paper is in Havana, but the Daily Havana, whatever.
There'd be a reporting, and it'd be reported
as
is.
And it would be with a straight face.
Yes. And members of the group that were came to meet me. There was two professors from the university. There was a head of an IT company, a senior meteorologist, a pastor to do with the church over there, and a healer, and there was many and a filmmaker. So there was that, you know, a whole spectrum of
broad
interest.
Well, that sounds like a pretty little wide profile of a bunch of people.
And they the story they gave me was an abduction. And I mentioned before that we were in Trinidad, and this the drive from Havana to Trinidad takes 5 hours. I know that because we drove there. It's a resort place. And this gentleman by the name of Rimberto Damaso, he lived in Trinidad, and he had been having sightings for quite some months, but this was a few years ago. And one morning he went to the bathroom to answer a call of nature, and he just got his shorts and his slippers on. The time was 5:30 a.m. in the morning, but he saw a light coming towards him at great speed. The next thing he remembered, he was flat on his back on the grass in Havana at 6:05. In the morning. So that's 30 minutes
that he can't account for.
That he can't account for. And you can't get from Trinidad to... He had, Rimberto had massive disorientation. He didn't know where he was or what had happened. And then the police drove him back to his home at 9 a.m. After some regression, he remembered two human-like beings taking him aboard a craft. And it was an oval-shaped, circular, semi-oval, circular shaped craft, and it had a circle underneath the craft, and it had an opening that with several different compartments, like the lens of one of the old shutter lenses, mm-hmm. like a petal. And he was taken up through that, and he said he was taken through a journey through the star system, and everything started to speed up. And that's, in a nutshell, that's all he could remember. And after that, he got, a year later, he got quite sick, and then he passed away.
Wow.
The doctors couldn't find out at first what was wrong with him. But it was interesting to note that his two sons didn't really believe their father's stories about the lights he'd been seeing. But Rimberto's last night on earth, I don't believe in death, but Rimberto's last night on earth before he passed over, his son, his eldest son, saw exactly the same craft, even with the circle aperture underneath. So that was extremely interesting.
Well, that is interesting. Mm. And you mentioned something there, the father and the son and seeing the same craft.
Yeah.
It seems to me that this follows in families.
Yes, I've heard of that
and
too.
You found that too.
Yes,
well,
my son sees things as well. So my son.
Have you had an ET contact yourself?
Not that I know of. Okay. Well, I.
Well,
you know.
Well, you got pictures, but yes. I mean, you haven't had a being come out with eye and forehead that look like a lens and talk to you.
I haven't seen any creatures or.
What do you make of this? Why is it worldwide? It sounds to me that maybe this person in Mongolia had the right answer.
Yes, well, that's right.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No,
What do you think about it?
Well, I mean, we live in a very small part of the cosmos, so, you know, and we have to accept that there's sentient beings of light that may not look like us, and we can't understand it. But I'm just accepting of what's given to me.
What's the most unusual story you've heard worldwide off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I was in Guatemala in the jungles about 2 years ago.
Yeah, you mentioned that again. That'd be a good one to follow up.
Yes, and there was a guide telling me of his mother. He hadn't seen an OVNI himself, but he said my mother saw one, and she had a little house in the jungles, and she got a little garden just in front of her place, and she was having trouble with leaf cutter ants, and she was out there one night with a stick flicking them off her plants or whatever, and she looked up, and there was this huge flying saucer straight out of a sci-fi magazine, it would sound, but they don't have any sci-fi magazines in the jungle. And it was round and flat, and it had around the edge, around the periphery, it had multicoloured lights pulsing on and off. And it just hovered above her house, and she watched it for about 15 or 20 minutes. and then it went in a straight line and it hovered over a monolith about half a mile away. And I asked the guide if his mother was frightened at all, and she says no. That was the first one she'd ever seen. She said, I felt it was that it was watching me, watching it. So,
when, you know, when you like you've got a world view of these things. You're very fortunate, I think. And I, idea? Is there any government? I guess is the best way that's more open. Seemed like the Cuban government was pretty open.
Well, the way the Cuban people and I
mean, they're allowed to put it in the papers. And
yeah,
they talk.
Yeah. Why not? Why not? So, and I remember in a few years in Chile, there was a speaker here from Chile, and he said in 1995, the Chilean government and the military officially recognised the existence of OVNIs, and that year they had the largest flap to that day. So that was very interesting. But in Thailand, there's been reports in the hills as well. So it's all over the place. It's all over the place.
Yeah. How about Australia? It seems to me that in your story, when you're talking about going to the military base, their attitude's more or less the same as here in the United States about UFOs.
Right, yes. And I, with all my pictures, I try only to be selective who I show them to. I don't show them to the media, per se, because I know what they'll do. They will lampoon the subject, so I just tend to shy away from it and just hope that I can still get some connection with whatever's out there. And I haven't got any answers, really.
Well, after Laughlin, you're going home.
Yes.
And then where are you going next, you know?
How do you
Tibet.
Decide?
We're Tibet, going, huh?
In the first week in April.
And well, you don't stay home long.
No. My husband's a chiropractor, and he and a few friends of ours, he goes to seminars all over the world. And we just, if we're in a country, we usually visit the countries next to them. So he goes to
his chiropractic meetings, and you go to the UFO people.
Yeah, I do my writing and asking questions, so it works out quite well.
Well, yeah, yeah. It works out good.
Yes, indeed.
Well, after how long have you been doing this?
Well, this is my 10th year here.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've...
Well, and you were obviously interested before you came
here.
Oh,
yes. I've always been, even from a little one, I've been interested in out there, looking at the stars.
And do you think you might have had contact and you just don't know about it yet?
Maybe. I can't answer that. Mm.
What's your feeling overall? You've been, you got a world vision of this. All the extraterrestrials, are they friendly, or have you run across some stories that weren't so friendly?
I try only to focus on the positive side of it.
So you don't want to hear about the negative?
Well, I don't know. I try to live in balance with everybody and everything. And if people start talking negative, I sort of tend to shy away from that. So I just try and concentrate
might
on the
positive. Might
unleash
something that you
yes,
don't
well,
need.
I don't know. Yes, so I just try and stay on the positive. I'm sure there are plenty of negative stories one could come up with, but I just try and stay with the positive side of it. So.
Okay, folks, you heard it. A worldwide journalist, Kathy Dickman, and she's looking for positive stories. Yeah, I'm just trying to take up for us in the media a little bit.
All right.
Yeah, okay. you never know. Kathy, anything else? Thanks for those pictures, by the way. And anything else you'd like to bring to the attention of the audience?
Yes.
That's not a sophisticated question, but I found out over the years it's probably the best question to ask at the end of an interview because sometimes we don't give people a chance to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got any closing thoughts?
There's two cases briefly I would like to mention.
Let's talk about them.
One in Thailand.
Okay.
It was 3 years ago. I was up in the mountains in Thailand, Chiang Mai and Chiang Rai up in the mountains. And once again, I asked a guide there, had he heard the word OVNI and UFO? And he says, oh, yes, there's a group of village people that lived on the slope of the hill about a few months before I was visiting there. They saw a light in the sky and they didn't know what it was because they weren't familiar with UFOs. And then they saw other lights visit the primary light. And they, once again, they said that this light seemed to be wanting to attract their attention. and they watch this aerial dance for quite a while. And I asked the guide, and I always ask this question, how did the lights exit? Because they could flash off, they could zip out or speed off or implode or evaporate. Mm-hmm. And they said they just slowly raised up and blended with the star field.
Just faded into the background.
And then I asked them, were they afraid?
Instead of turning on the cloaking machine, they turned on the camouflage machine.
Yes, and I asked them, were they afraid? And they said, well, they weren't sure what they were. They had never seen anything like that before, so they kept it quiet until some other people, the other side of the mountain, came to visit, selling goods or whatever, and they mentioned that they'd seen the same thing. So then they started to talk together, that, you know, like, and swap stories, so to speak. So
yeah.
And another place in Guatemala, I was staying at Lake Tikal, and there was a guide there called Noah. And there's a very large lake, and he said that quite often the fishermen on some nights see lights in the sky, and they're doing their aerial dance. And when these lights appear, they always have a power blackout, always have a blackout. And I asked again, were the fishermen afraid? And this is, they're used to it.
You know, there seems to be a commonality there about power failures and things.
Yes, yes, that's right. So.
So I guess maybe these things draw on electrical magical energy of some sort. Mm. I don't know how to describe it exactly. Okay, well, it's been interesting. Got anything else?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, well, I've talked you out then. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be looking forward to hearing from you from time to time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Stay in contact, please. Yeah. Kathy Dickman, ace reporter for UFO ideas and stories and folklore. She gets to the bottom of it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing about that report coming up in April. One final thing. I know I've already said that, but you've been to South America at least twice.
Oh, yeah, many times.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems like there's a lot of action down there. Do you agree?
Yes. Yeah.
Are the ETs, do they like the Latin blood, or what do you think
reason is? Well, in Mexico, I've been there many times, and they just treat them as their ancient ancestors.
I think it's a mindset
of the people that they're accepting of them.
Yeah.
So they just, you know, they say, oh, here they are again. You know, there's no fear or screaming in the streets.
We got the appropriate music behind us, the Aeon mindset. That's the way we're going to close this. Thanks very much, Kathy Dickman. This is Jerry Pippin. We'll be right back. We're at the UFO Congress, of course, and people come here from, well, I've met people from Bulgaria, Italy, Greece, Kathy from Australia, and I've been here about a couple, maybe 3 hours already. So this is definitely an international event. We'll be back in a moment with a man from Ireland. We just did a show with him on the phone. Now we're going to do something in person. Patrick Heron. So don't go away. It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? The most concise and complete series ever broadcast on Roswell, direct from Roswell. New programs added weekly. Check it out on the UFO Congress on JerryPippin.com.
About 8 or 10 miles
left. We're here at the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada, and we have Patrick Heron all the way from Ireland as our guest. He wrote a book called The Nephilim and the Pyramid and the Apophagus. It'll be an interesting show. It's always interesting to talk to Patrick. We'll cover some old ground and some new ground. A little different than Dublin as far as the landscape, huh?
Yeah, over where I come from, there's a lot of grass, there's a lot of trees, and a lot of Polish immigrants now. What we have here is a lot of desert, and the Colorado River running through it, I guess.
Yeah. Now let's talk a little bit about your DVDs. You have two versions of that, right?
Yes. Grizzly Adams Productions made two versions of the DVD based on two of my books. Apocalypse Soon, which was my first book, and it was a bestseller in Ireland 10 years ago, and just been republished in the United States 2 weeks ago by Anomalous Publishing, which is RaidersNewsUpdate.com, Tom Horn's publishing situation. And that's fantastic. And The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse, which I spoke to you about before last year, Jerry, and which was number one in the prophecy section of Amazon Books for 2 years. One of the top 10 publishers in the States bought the rights off me last year. They got it into the shops just before Christmas. They included all those rude pictures which weren't on the original Christian version because I didn't want to offend people. But the present publisher is a secular publisher. They included them. So if you want to see some rude pictures of Nephilim, of fallen angels with large privy members, they're in the new edition. That's in Barnes & Noble, Borders, etc. It's selling quite well. He told me they shipped the first 10,000 copies just before Christmas and it was selling well, and they were doing a reprint in February. So it's gone very well. Then Grizzly Adams Productions made two DVDs, a Christian version for the Christian market called End Times, How Close Are We? And a secular version for the secular market called Apocalypse and the End Times. And that aired on PAX TV, on dozens of other Christian stations and stuff. We've had fantastic response for it. Grizzly Adams, very professional, very slick, very cool.
Now, you just finished doing a lecture today. How did that go over here with this audience? I know you tailor, you're a very talented guy, and you can talent, you tailor things to meet your audience.
Yes.
But, I mean, just like your secular and your regular religious DVD, they're basically the same, but they're really not.
Well, I've been on most of the radio stations I've been on in the States in the last 2 years, and it's about 130 of them now. Many, many, many of them are paranormal stations, and I get very, very well received by those people. They're really, really good people. Thank God that the United States is still the land of the free and the brave, and there's still freedom of speech, and you can get on there and chat. And it makes a lot of sense, because there's a huge crossover between what I'm talking about and what the UFO people are into. I mean, they're talking about extraterrestrials, they're talking about aliens, they're talking about the Anunnaki who've come from Nibiru or Planet X and who are returning again. And what I'm talking about as well, this is exactly what the Bible talks about, except it doesn't call them aliens or extraterrestrials or Anunnaki. It calls them the fallen angels. And they do come from another place outside our solar system, outside our galaxy, i.e. a place called biblically heaven. And as I said in my presence today, probably the best UFO handbook in the world is probably the Bible. But people just don't realize, because they're not reading between the lines somewhat.
Yeah, you and I have had big discussions about it, and we've done several shows together, as you alluded earlier. And there are a lot of very similar instances and stories and things so you're absolutely right about that. Any what are you working on now?
Well, I'm still starting to promote my book, The Nephilim, and the DVD. I've been on a good few radio stations since. Tom Horn now wants me to start going on radio stations talking about Apocalypse Soon, so I might be looking for another interview for you in a couple of months' time, Jerry. And I'm doing that. But there are a few things...
Well, what do you feel about Apocalypse Soon? Is it coming up?
Oh, I think it is. I think it is. All the major experts in this field are all saying we're there, you know. That, as you know, the main signs when they ask the Messiah what would be the signs of the end, is wars, rumors of wars, famines, earthquakes, diseases, immorality, lawlessness, blah, 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 all that stuff. But the main sign is to do with the fact that the Jews are back in Israel. That's the biggie. The loads of prophecies said they'd be scattered all over the world, be persecuted, hated of all nations, scattered abroad, and that happened in 70 AD. When Titus sacked Jerusalem to put down an insurrection, scattered the Jews all over the world, hence the wandering Jew. Everywhere they've gone, they've been despised and persecuted and hated, which culminated in the Holocaust and the Second World War. But dozens of other prophecies said in the last days that God would regather his people and establish them in Palestine again, and he would do this as a sign to the rest of the world that we're in the last throw of the dice. So they're there since 1948. World peace is contingent upon what happens in that neck of the woods. And I mean, switch on the news tonight. What is it? It's the Palestinians, the Hezbollah. It's the Jews fighting. Iran wants to wipe them off the map. You know, it's all happening. The writing is on the wall. But the good news is that there's, you know, that there is good news. There's an alternative and a way out for people who want to know. And, of course, that's what I make available in my books.
Now, when we when we talk about the end of the world, you're talking about the world ends completely, right?
Well, it will eventually. The next big thing to happen on the prophetic timetable is what a lot of Christians call the rapture. That's not actually called that in the eschatology. It's called a gathering together of the saints or the church of God. People who believe in the Lord, in the Messiah, are going to be taken. And he's a cool guy. I mean, the thing is, Jerry, you know, I'm a bit different from most of your Christians. As I said to the people in there today, I like my few pints of Guinness and my couple of Irish whiskeys, you know. And I'll be doing that tonight, please God, because I've done so much talking today. But he's a cool guy. If he was here today, he'd be wearing a T-shirt and a pair of jeans, and he'd be down in the bar. That's why when he was here, they accused him of being a wine bibber and hanging around with sinners, because that's who he hung around. Because they're the people who need it to be saved, you know, not the guys with the tall hats and the long frocks on them up in the pulpits every week.
What do you make of all of the sightings? It seems to me there's more sightings, and part of that's communication, the internet. We were talking about that just before we started.
Right.
But what do you make of ETs and UFOs? What's happening here with all that?
What I talked about in the second half of my talk today was what you call the return of the Nephilim. Mm-hmm. These guys are coming back. They are coming back. According to the book of Daniel, it prophesies about a 10-nation confederacy government that's going to run the earth in the coming apocalypse. It talks about 10 toes made up of iron and clay. And the clay part of the 10-nation confederacy is human beings. It's us. Dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. That's the clay. And the iron is the Nephilim, because it says, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. And it's the 10 toes made of clay and iron is a 10-nation confederacy that's going to rule the world. It's a G10. At the moment, we've G8 at the moment. That's the way it's heading. And that's why they're breaking down the borders between Mexico and Canada and the United States. That's why the European Union, the EU, is enlarging all its borders. They're all getting into clubs, and they're all getting grouping into 10 of these geopolitical organizations. And in the coming apocalypse, we're told that the Nephilim, the original fallen angels, we spoke about this before, that were here at flood, are locked up in this subterranean prison called Tartarus. It's called the bottomless pit. It's called the abyss.
And you believe that's literally in the center of the earth.
It's down underneath our feet somewhere, and it says the Messiah, in his risen body, went and preached to these guys when he had got his new spiritual body up from the dead. And that's not preached where he was trying to redeem them. It's caruso, which means he heralded his triumph over them. That would be the same word that was used of a Roman emperor, for instance, coming back and parading his captives and his slaves and his treasures before the citizens of Rome. He triumphed, he heralded his triumph over them, and that's what the Messiah did in his risen body. He said, here I am, boys, I'm up from the dead, you know, I've spoiled all your goose is cooked, and I'll be back, or words to that effect. And also, around the same time that these guys are going to be released in the coming apocalypse, we're told that the other guys, Lucifer and the rest of those fallen angels, the even guys, there's going to be a war in heaven. It says they're getting the boot, and it says they're going to fall to earth like figs falling from a fig tree shaken by a mighty wind. And an interesting thing is that I got an email from a young guy, Australian guy, last summer, who told me that he was in New Zealand and he had this vision, this dream, and he said that he was on a mountain and somebody said, look, and he looked up in the air and he said he saw all these hundreds of floating flying pyramids. And he said some of them are huge, as big as the Great Pyramid. And they came down to earth, and he said, the Nephilim are here. And he believes this was a vision that he'd seen from God, that the Nephilim are going to fall to earth in, quote, pyramid-shaped spaceships, or as it were.
Yes.
Right after I did my talk today, a girl came back out to me. She said, I had that same dream 7 years ago. And she pulled out some pictures right here behind you of these pyramids that she drew when she had it 7 years ago. I've got to meet her later on. I talked to another guy in Texas who told me the exact same thing, that he said three visions of the Nephilim coming to earth in the future in pyramids, and another vision that I saw on a website of pyramids coming down. And perhaps that's why you see a lot of pyramids. I showed some pictures of crop circles here today, incredible crop circles, and in about three of them there was amazing pyramids right in the middle of them. And a lot of people who are seeing UFOs now are saying they're triangular in shape. Right. And I think that these guys are preparing the world for their advent, because they can't just show up here. They'd frighten the living crap out of everybody if they just arrived. So crop circles, UFO sightings, abductions, they're preparing for what's coming down the road.
So when they come back, what would happen to humanity?
Well, the people that are going to be here on the earth at time, most of them are going to be deceived, they said, by these guys, because these are powerful gods. These are going to be full of wisdom, full of knowledge, full of supernatural ability, full of magic tricks. And it says they're going to deceive almost the whole world with their lying signs and wonders, even to the point where you've got this guy called the Antichrist, and that's in the stead of Christ. It's not against him. He's going to approach himself as, I am the Messiah. And the Orthodox Jews are getting ready for their Messiah, because they don't believe that the Messiah was here 2,000 years ago. And also, the interesting thing is that Islam, and the president of Iran speaks about this all the time, says that this Mahdi, our 12th Imam, is coming back, and that he's going to establish Islam all over the world in a series of apocalyptic battles. And that when this guy comes back, he's going to have a lieutenant, a right-hand man, who is Jesus Christ. Which is amazing. So the Islam are expecting their Mahdi, the Jews are expecting their Messiah, and according to the book of Revelation, there's going to be an Antichrist, this guy in the stead of Christ, and he's going to have a right-hand man called the False Prophet. And this guy is going to be powerful. He's going to be able to breathe life into a statue of the beast, of the Antichrist, and make it come alive. So, you know, you can see the world and the politics that's going on over in Israel between the Jews and the Palestinians and the Arabs. It's just wide open for somebody, for one or two guys, to walk in there and say, we're going to have peace in this place. And they'll have to be acceptable to the Islam.
So you're saying this could happen any time?
Well, you know, when the Messiah, when they asked him what all these signs was, and he gave all this list of things, wars, famines, earthquakes, diseases, weird weather, etc. He said, when you see all these things happening, and especially the Jews back in Israel, he said, it's going to be like a fig tree that shoots forth its figs. He says, lift up your head, your redemption is drawing near. So the writing's on the wall. Now, Jerry, I don't know what's going to happen this year, 5 years, or 25 years, but it's close.
You think of yourself as? Do you think of yourself as a spiritual man, a religious man, a historic man, a guy that studies history? Where do you put yourself in this picture?
I am.
What is? You know, you got a message here.
Yes, I am. I would say I'm a sort of an evangelist type person. I'm Irish. I like me a few pints of Guinness and me little drop of Irish whiskey. As I said in there, you know, a little bit drop of Irish whiskey. I don't know if you like whiskey, Jerry, but it goes down your throat like a torchlight procession and lights up the toes in your boots.
Yeah,
it's grand.
I drink some things beside grape Kool-Aid. Go ahead. Yeah, you're right.
So that's what I like, but I'm an evangelist type person. It's my job to sort of win people. I bring them in, and I'm using all this interest in the pyramids, Stonehenge, Easter Island.
Yeah, and we talked in detail about this on one of the shows, in which you literally feel that you have to have some sort of born-again experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely, you do. But, I mean, it's not a bad thing. I mean, a lot of the Christians...
Well, I'm not insinuating it is.
I know, but a lot of people... Yeah. When I switch on the television when I come to the United States, and some of the guys that are on there, I'm taken home. Oh, my God, this guy's, you know... My name's Ernst Ainsley, and I'm going to save you by the power.
You do a pretty good job, Patrick.
You know, and I see some of these guys, or else they're trying to get their money off you. Yeah. You know, send us in 20 bucks, right. And you're going. And that really, really makes me want to throw up. You know,
yeah.
I'm not religious at all, but I am spiritual, extremely spiritual. Mm-hmm. It was the religious people that screwed the Messiah when he came. The first guys, they were the ones that were always trying to back him into a corner. They were always trying to trip him up. Who organized his betrayal, his kangaroo court, his torture, and his ultimate murder were the chief priests, the Pharisees, and the doctors of the law. In other words, the religious leaders. So when I see religious people coming, I'm running in the opposite direction. I want to head down and get me pint of Guinness quick.
Yeah.
That keeps me sane.
You have any idea where these Nephilim are or from?
They're from heaven. They're still resident in that place at the moment.
Okay.
These guys, it says in Revelation...
Is that in another dimension?
Or? Absolutely, outside our galaxy. But they're spirit men. They're spirit. Mm-hmm. You and I are flesh and blood. These guys are spirit, so they're not constrained by the ordinary laws of physics as we are.
But when they come here...
Well, they can zip between here and where they are in the blink of an eye, I guess. It's like, beam me up, Snotty. Or Scotty, excuse me.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. In Michael, the good guy, and his angels, and Lucifer, or Satan, and his angels. And it says, they prevailed not, neither is their place found any more in heaven. So they still live in this place. I think heaven is probably a bit like Earth. At one point, you've got... in my father's house are many mansions. You've got Mount Zion, this pyramid city, the New Jerusalem. Sitting there is a fellow called God, and his right hand is his son, surrounded by 24 thrones with 24 elders on them. We don't know who those guys are, so we won't speculate. But these are probably the guys from Genesis that said, let us make man in our image. And then we have Satan and Lucifer and the rest of the fallen angels. They're still in that place because it says that he appears night and day before the throne of God accusing the brethren. He's saying, look at that Paddy Heron guy down there. He had 5 pints of Guinness last night and 2 Tullamore Dews. Then he went home and had a row with his wife and kicked the cat. He's a sinner. He's accusing the brethren day and night. But it says in this future war, they're going to get the boot. It says they're going to fall to earth like figs falling from a fig tree, which is a good mind image of them falling to earth. And they're going to appear here, but they're going to present themselves as benign, benevolent gods, beings that are going to save mankind, take mankind to the next level of evolution and bring peace to humanity, get rid of famines and all that. And that's going to work for the first 3.5 years of the apocalypse. But in the second 3.5 years is when the guacamole hits the fan. And that's when all hell breaks loose, literally, on the earth.
Like what's going to happen?
You're going to, everything you see now with the famines, the earthquakes, diseases, immorality, lawlessness, it's going to be magnified 1,000-fold. You're going to have a huge army, it says, from the east, numbering 200 million, marching westward. And it says they wipe out 1/3 of the population of the world in their march westward. Now, there's only one country in the world at the moment that has a standing army of 200 million.
China.
It says the kings of the east rising. That's them. They're building up more and more power. They've got a lot of money. They're huge. Air force and stuff like that. They're going to march westward to this valley in northern Israel called the Valley of Megiddo. This is at the end of the 7 years. In the meantime, I think there's going to be, I reckon, about 3 nuclear strikes in there. Well, 2 so far. Then they're going to be met in this Valley of Megiddo by a huge army from the west under the power of this guy called the Antichrist.
So, in other words, the way you see it, it hasn't happened yet.
Oh, gosh, no. No, we haven't. And that's the good news. That's why I'm here. Right. What I'm saying is, look, the bad news is the Titanic's gone down. The good news is you don't have to get on it. So I'm here to try and get people off it. I mean, supposing it was 1912 and I met you and your family walking down the pier in Cove, which is in Ireland, or Southampton, and I stopped you and I said, Jerry, don't get on that boat, it's going to sink. You said, what do you mean sink, Paddy? That boat can't sink, it's unsinkable. And I said, well, I have the proof, and I pulled out the video Titanic. I'm sure if I showed it to you, it would frighten the living daylights out of you, but you'd be very glad that you and your family didn't get on it, right? Now, it's the same. That's what I feel like I'm doing with my books. I'm showing that people that, hey, metaphorically speaking, the Titanic's gone down, but you don't have to get on it. There's an escape route, there's a way out, and I'm providing the evidence. I don't have a video, I've got a book of evidence. And once you read the book, it's going to give you enough evidence to where you can say, yeah, I can believe this, or it's a load of rubbish. And even if you don't believe it, you're still going to have a chance in the apocalypse. Well, why would you want to go through that stuff? Because it's going to be very, very bad. When this stuff starts hitting the fan in the apocalypse, it's going to be worse than Cambodia, Vietnam, Rwanda, the First World War, the Second World War, everything rolled into one. That it's going to make them look like an afternoon tea party compared to what's coming down. So it's a bad time coming.
And you're still a fairly optimistic fellow.
I'm absolutely optimistic because I'm having a great time, you know, I'm having a ball. All I know is God must have a hell of a sense of humour to allow an Irish man who, like me, do what I'm doing and drink pints of Guinness, and he still forgives me every time I take one or two too many, you know. Well, I'm not an alcoholic, I don't want to be making out I am, but I like me a few pints at the weekend, you know. And I'm having a ball, and I feel we live in very exciting days, but I'm here to warn people, that's what I'm doing.
Okay, Patrick, it's great to meet you in person. We'll be talking on the phone again, I'm sure, from Ireland. We'll be doing more shows. And let's mention the DVDs again. They're available. And also, you need to plug your book.
Okay, well, my DVDs, you'll get them in Barnes & Nobles and Borders and Walmart and all those places by Grizzly Adams. Very, very good show. The show is an hour long, which I appear in it. Then there's another hour bonus section, which I get a whole half an hour doing my things on the fallen angels and all that. My book, The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse, it's in Barnes & Noble and Borders and other bookshops now. It's doing very well. Your gast will be flabbered if you read that book. It'll rattle your cage big time, but it's very, very well. I'm getting great responses to it. And of course, my first book, Apocalypse Soon, has been reprinted, and that's a short and sweet thing. It's very short. You'd read it in one or two evenings, but it's what I call a sawn-off shotgun. But for some reason, people love it. People have contacted me, like said, I read it 3 times, I read it 5 times. In fact, I met a young Dublin man and his wife in Italy.
You didn't write this in longhand, did you?
I did. I wrote all 3 books in longhand.
Oh, wow.
Wrote them all 3 with a pen and paper. But I met a guy in Italy a couple of years ago, a young Italian guy. And when he met me, he said, did you write a book? And I said, yeah. And he said, what was it called? I said, Apocalypse Soon. He said, are you Robert Heron? I said, no, I'm Patrick Heron, Paddy Heron. He said, I read Apocalypse Soon 3 times in a row and it saved my life. So that book is available too, you know.
So now I understand why you're optimistic. You get good feedback.
I get absolutely great feedback. And I was talking to a lady earlier after the show, and she said she was in the bathroom, and she said she heard nothing but good things in the bathroom.
Well, good. With that, we'll close. Thanks very much, Patrick.
Thank you, Jerry. Lovely to meet you in person.
Okay,
God bless
you. Great.
This is our first hour, actually our second hour, but the first hour of this season of the UFO Congress in our series. The series will be running all through March. We'll probably have a show every day at least, and sometimes maybe we'll slip in and it'll be every other day. But we have quite a series that we're recording here at the UFO Congress. It's always a pleasure coming to Laughlin to the UFO Congress. I remember this started in Las Vegas many years ago with Bob Brown and the UFO Congress, and it's grown to probably be the premier UFO convention wherever. And Bob Brown and his lovely wife, Terry, have always been the force behind the success. They've made this really a tremendous, tremendous event. Unfortunately, we have some sad news to pass on tonight. Terry Brown passed away from a lingering illness. It's been haunting her now for a couple of years. And finally, it got the best of her on Sunday night at 11 o'clock in a hospital in their home town there in Colorado. Bob was at her side when she passed. Nikki has been putting the conference together. That's the daughter. And she made the announcement to the crowd. They were all in shock, even though most people knew that Terry was not in good health. At this time, we'd like to pass on our best wishes and sympathy. And we know this is a tough time. But we've all heard the axiom, the show must go on. And Nikki Brown's doing a great job. She's a real trooper. And this is one of the best Congress conventions they've had. And I'm sure it will be for the rest of the week. Bob, we offer our best to you and to Nikki and to the rest of the family and to the group. Actually, the entire UFO Congress is like one big family. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Our on-location producer has been Roberta Scott, and our technical editor has been Jane Swartley. Cheers.